This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Let's just go to that story in the Western Cape to get a sense of what is happening to the health system. We are going to be joined by Mark van der Heuwe, a spokesperson for the Western Cape Health Department. Mark, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Hi, good morning, Lucanio, and yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for making the time. Mark, it seems as if while the country might be talking about, you know, edging out of the third wave in the Western Cape, this might not be the case as yet.
Yes, definitely not the case just yet. We are giving ourselves at least another week to have a bigger picture and a better picture on what the situation looks like. But what we are seeing is that there is still an increase of cases, albeit at a lower rate of infection. So we are still seeing cases coming. We are still seeing hospitalizations. We are still seeing deaths, but they are at a lower rate than other parts of the country. So while everybody or most of the country is coming out of their third wave, we are basically still in it. And although at a slower rate.
I mean, Mark, yes, the lower rate. In terms of hospitalization, what is the picture that you are seeing, though, in terms of, you know, people who come in, what after triage, what are they presenting with? How many, you know, just a sense, the burden need, for example, for oxygen, whether it is on a ventilator or even at a ward level, those some people get oxygen there. How is that looking, Mark?
Look, we are seeing just over 300 admissions per day, and that is a worrying sign, but it's also a sign that we are getting to that point where we can say that we have reached our peak and we are going to come out of it. But in terms of hospitalization, oxygen use, our oxygen use currently is just under 70 tons per day, which is our maximum capacity at a plant. We do have the capacity to bring in additional oxygen tankers, but at the moment it's nearing its maximum capacity. And then, look, from the first, second, and now in this wave, we've increased the high-flow nasal oxygen points and access for people to get on there. And just over 400 of those points have been installed and are active and activated at our sites. But we must also keep in mind, not everybody requires oxygen.
Yes.
So when we do get those people that do not require oxygen, then we've got our intermediate care facilities, such as our field hospitals that are still open, and that's our Brackengate, which can accommodate 338 people, and Sonsterau Hospital. We haven't been able, or we have not been forced to open additional wards at our Mitchells Plain Hospital of Hope, which is a good sign. But that is able and it is available should we be in a position where we need to increase capacity, we can do that. But it's just in terms of our ICU care, that is where we are seeing a high demand and a high utilization of our available capacity.
And I suppose, Mark, the picture is not the same throughout the province. Where would you say your hotspot areas are, where you are probably doing the greatest of surveillance, monitoring, just to make sure that you are not caught off guard in case something changes?
Look, we've got a provincial surveillance team that engages with all of our districts on a bi-daily basis. So every second day they engage and we get a sense of what is it. But we also have our bed bureau system that we can monitor the bed utilization uptake on a regular basis. That's by the hour that we can do that. But in terms of our hotspots, look, the metro is our biggest population area, and we are running at about 80% of our bed occupancy in the metro. And then following that is in our Garden Route and in our Paarl area. That's where we do see also a a high demand and high utilization of our beds.
And Mark, insofar as you know the burden between the private and public hospitals, how are you trying to alleviate you know that burden? Are you seeing more concentration in the private sector or in the public sector? And are you able to coordinate, you know, support across these two sectors so that you know people do not go without receiving the necessary care that they deserve?
No, definitely. Look, what we saw a week and a half, 2 weeks back, was that there was a high utilization in the private sector. What we are seeing this past week is that the increase has started to occur in the public sector. Mm. But between the two, we do have an agreement in place. Should any of either parties require assistance, then that will be afforded to them. So whether that be from public to private or private to public, we've got that agreement that we will support one another.
And I think, Mark, there's also a concern that, you know, you've seen a number of trauma cases increasing as part of the taxi violence. Did it have any material impact in some areas and therefore, you know, your ability to accommodate other COVID-19 related cases?
I think, yes, it did. For the past week, we did see an increase in our trauma presentations, and also noting that alcohol was still banned. So we can't put the burden on alcohol usage and those trauma presentations. But the taxi violence definitely had an impact on our system because we saw many trauma patients coming through. And for this current weekend, we started yesterday and basically on Wednesday already, just to appeal to the public that we do know that it's end of weekend. We do know that alcohol sales were open until yesterday, but we ask people support to be responsible so that we've got the necessary space within our trauma units and within our hospital beds to accommodate those people who present to us non-trauma related as well.
I mean, Mark, when we started off with the management of COVID-19, there was a lot of emphasis, you know, on community work to be done, whether it would be, you know, tracing for people who have come into contact with positive COVID positive cases, or in some instances, it was an attempt to try and do community screening. What type of work is being done currently in communities to aid in the management of COVID-19?
Look, currently we are in that paradigm of mitigation. So community screening and testing is not going to be able to give us an indication as to who are the people that we need to care for, who are the people that we need to look after and protect. Similar goes with contact tracing. There are so many at the moment that it's not going to aid us in any way. But what we do know is that those people coming to our hospitals requiring hospitalization, they are the ones that we do need to look after, because the others, and it might sound a bit frank, the others can still isolate, they can still recover. But those ones presenting, and I'm talking about our vulnerable, our over 60s, our over 50s, and our people with comorbidities, they are the ones that will require our care, will require health services in order to survive. And that's our focus. We want to protect and save those lives because they have a lesser chance of surviving without our intervention, without our care. So you see that this is also what COVID taught us over the last 18 months, is that we know who's our vulnerable group, who's our vulnerable population, who are the age categories that can fend off the infection by natural immunity. So it's all those kinds of things that our health teams are grappling with on a daily basis. And to also add to that is the trauma burden, the trauma pressure. And then you've got somebody presenting with COVID needing to be admitted, somebody that presents with a trauma case, maybe a stab or shot wound. Mm. And at the end of the day, they will then compete for a bed. And this is where our health teams come in, our medical teams come in, and they, unfortunately, it's so hard for them and it's so difficult for them to make that call on whose life is are you going to save?
Yeah. And I mean, Mark, one of the things that have been affected by, you know, this pandemic has been the area of elective surgeries, some having to be pushed out. Do you think that there is now good gain being made in that space? Because, you know, some people, even though there may be elective surgeries, they still need to happen at some point because either some are living with a discomfort, some are trying to avert a possible problem down the line in their health, you know, in their wellness.
No, definitely. Look, and that's why throughout all three waves, we acknowledge that somewhere down this pandemic, we will have to make a call on what is the priority now. The priority now is to save lives. So we had to de-escalate and scale down on a number of elective surgeries. We also saw a lower uptake in terms of preventative care, such as your TB screenings, your HIV screenings. And when we were able, in between waves, in between first and second, and in between second and third, we emphasized and we pushed those services that were affected back up to a point where we can say that for an elective surgery, this is your date and you can come. Mm. And as we entered the third wave now, we had to tell those people that unfortunately we will have to push your surgery out until when it's safe for us to be able to do that surgery, because it's not just a surgery that's involved. All those people coming for surgery have to undergo a COVID test. They have to be negative in order for them to be operated on. So it's all those things that we took on board, took into play, and we do know that there is it has left an impact on several people's lives already. Like you mentioned, it just impacts on their ability. So once we get to a stage where we are safe again to continue that and where there's not so much pressure on saving lives, then we'll push that up again. And I know our teams have a lot of plans that they want to implement once we are able to do so that we can get that up and running again.
Absolutely. Mark, before I let you go, just give us a picture. How is your vaccination rollout going in the province? Are you happy? Do you feel that more could have been done? I know that at some point the province was quite frustrated by the procurement strategy that we are employing as a country.
Look, during this week, we passed the 1 million mark of vaccinations being administered, which is a good thing. But we have so much more to do. And our teams continue pushing the boundaries. This week that we're finishing off now, we had a constrained supply of vaccines. But even so, our team still continued pushing. For the past 2 weeks, our target was 150,000. We've exceeded that. And the stats currently point to us that we will be exceeding 150,000 vaccinations for this week again. But then for next week, I note that we got 90,000 Pfizer vaccines and getting 33,000 J&J vaccines. So that will then further enable us to continue in expanding our vaccination access, because we also note that from the 1st of August, our 35 and older groups will also be eligible, even though we have seen at several of our sites that where there is an opportunity or we can vaccinate a 35 plus, we do so, just so that a vaccine does not go wasted.
Absolutely.
And for this coming week, we anticipate that there will be a bigger demand because that group will be scheduled to come on addition to our 50-year-olds, to our 60-year-olds that must still come back for their second doses. And then looking further ahead, 1st of September, then the over 18s are going to come on board. So the demand is there. People want to be vaccinated. So if we can just support and cater for that demand with sufficient vaccines available, then I think we will be in a good space. We are currently, I can say we from a Western Cape point of view, our vaccination program has exceeded our expectations, faced with all of the constraints that we were faced with.
Mark, it would be amiss of me not to ask, you spoke about 300 admissions per day on average. Are you doing any work to understand, you know, of those, how many people have already been vaccinated but are still presenting to hospitals? How many have not been vaccinated? Because I think it becomes an important marker with where we are insofar as the vaccine rollout is concerned, and also understanding the impact of the vaccine as part of the management on COVID-19.
No, definitely. And we've got a dedicated team that is looking into that. For each and every case that is presenting and admitted, they do the background check. Were you vaccinated? How far back were you vaccinated? And then they, through that knowledge gaining, they then engage the South African Medical Research Council as well as SAHPRA. And between the three of those bodies, they are looking into it so that we can have an understanding as to what is the breakthrough infection, what is the breakthrough death that we're looking at. And I note that Professor Linda Gelbeke did a presentation yesterday, and it showed that it's minimal at this stage. It's rare and it's scarce that somebody that's been vaccinated is then admitted again. It's rare that somebody that's been vaccinated sadly passed away. But that they'll put an announce on in the coming 7 to 10 days, and I don't want to interfere with their work going on, so I'll leave that to them. But what I can tell you is, from what we've seen from a health department point of view, we have vaccinated 28,000 of our employees, and we have seen a big reduction in the number of infections in terms of where we are now in this third wave compared to where we were in the second wave, the peak of the second wave and the peak of the first wave. We first and second wave, we were looking at like 1,600, 2,300 infections. Currently, we at, I think, 600 infections overall and not current infections. So it just goes to show that the vaccine does offer protection against severe illness and death. And that is what we can take on board from just seeing the data in our health personnel.
Absolutely. Mark, thank you so much for making time for us this morning here on Power Talk.
Oh, thank you very much, man. Go well.
Only a pleasure. Keep well. That's a spokesperson for the Department of Health in the Western Cape, Mark van der Heever, joining us there just to give us an update and an outlook of what is going on in the health facilities and the burden that they are navigating through as they are edging towards the peak of the third wave of this COVID-19 pandemic in the province. Well, it is 7 minutes to 11. We'll take a short break, and then after that, take a bit of a short left to Tegwini Gagasini to understand some of the work that is being done by civil society there, demanding justice for the Phoenix massacre. We are trying to get in touch with some of the organizers. Hopefully, we will be able to have a breakthrough in that connection very soon.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.